of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Tax Committee. Welcome, everyone, and would just like to start out with some general comments. First of all, I'm really grateful to my caucus and to Senator Scoy and Senator Bach for allowing me this very unique opportunity to participate in tax reform discussions this biennium. Means a lot to me, Senator Scoy. And secondly, I would like all of you to become familiar with the Senate staff that is going to be helping all of us as we move forward in the division, hearing a variety of let me know if I'm not speaking loud enough. Is it better? Okay, thank you. As we move forward in the consideration of any number of proposals. First of all, for the division, the committee administrator is to my right, Brenda Schaefer-Pellinen, the legislative assistant for the committee, is Chris McCall, who in the past you may have become familiar with him, working with Senator Murphy on the Transportation Committee some time back. The legislative assistant to the vice chair is Allie Holtzman. And Senator Coonan is the vice chair of counsel to the committee is Nora Pollock here. Eric Sylvia, down there, okay. The legislative analyst is Jack Paulson, and the fiscal analyst is Shelby McQuay. Chris Baller, who's right behind me, is the page for the committee. For the full committee, the committee administrator is someone familiar, I think, to all of you, Camp O'Rourke, and the legislative assistant is Donovan Hurd, and we have three interns that are helping out in the committee through this session. Pleased to welcome Senator Thompson as the Republican lead on the division. I don't believe you've served on the tax committee yet.
Is that correct? Right?
Okay.
Yes.
So we look forward to your contributions.
Thank you.
And with that, let's have self-introductions. If you'd give us your name and a little bit about the district, and if you have any particular interest in an area of tax policy, if you would let us know that. Senator Eaton.
Senator Chris Eaton. I'm from Senate District 40, Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park. I'm new to the Tax Committee also, and I'm willing to learn.
Great. Senator Thompson.
Dave Thompson. I live in Lakeville. My district includes Lakeville, Farmington, and then a large part of southern Dakota County all the way down to the Northfield border, and I'm very interested in talking about keeping spending under control, and, of course, taxation is a part of that.
Senator Coonan.
I'm Senator Lyle Coonan. I represent District 17, which includes Kandi, Ojai, Swift, Chippewa, and most of Renville County. And I'm fairly new to the Senate. I was elected in a special election back in April, but had some history in the House. I was first elected there in 2002 and spent 8 years on the Tax Committee in the House.
I'm Rod Scoy, State Senator from District 2. It's a large area in north central Minnesota, extending from the chimney of the state down to south of Monaga. Happy to be here. I think this division is going to have a real good year. A lot of interesting work is going to occur in this division, I expect. So looking forward to it.
Hi, my name is Carrie Dietzick. I am the state senator from District 60, representing Northeast Minneapolis, Southeast Minneapolis, a little part of the Seward neighborhood in Cedar Riverside. I was elected in a special election a year ago, and this is my first time on taxes, and I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Good morning. State Senator Paul Gazalka from District 9, which is Gull Lake on the west side of Brainerd, all the way over to Wadena, south to Long Prairie and over to Little Falls. Those are some of the towns in those counties. I've not been on the tax committee before, but there's just a variety of issues that I've always been interested in. So whether it's property taxes or military pensions or estate taxes, some of those things that I hope to contribute on.
Thank you. And the other member of our division is Senator Ortman, who is the previous chair of the full tax committee, and her district is in Carver and Scott County, I believe, Chanhassen and Chaska, and we look forward to learning from her experience on the committee and her contributions. I'd like to direct the members' attention, before we get to the bills, to the committee procedures that are in your packets and some of the other stuff that's there. We will do our best to begin promptly. If you're unable to be here, you will be marked excused. Members will be marked excused. We would appreciate the courtesy, however, for our staff to be planning for making sure that we have a quorum by letting Brenda Schaefer-Pellinen know if you can't be here. We ask the members to, and witnesses for that matter, to address staff and witnesses by whatever social title they go by, Mr., Ms., Mrs., whatever, Miss, and their last name, or senator, and all action, just reminding people that all actions need to go through the chair, and that's the reason for that is to make sure that the tape is clear. We hope that if you have handouts for bills, and we'll make sure that other authors know that as well, that we get them a day in advance, and the reason for that is the ease in copying. Same thing with amendments. We hope that when we get to bills that we're actually voting on, that which we will not be doing today, that even if there is an oral amendment, that sometime during the hearing the member is able to get the amendment in writing to the committee legislative assistant. If you want anything saved, the only thing that will automatically be saved is the tax expenditure budget. But otherwise, put it in the save folder. And with other materials, we will recycle them following the hearing. This is a division of the tax committee, but the way in which requests for hearings will be handled is that they will go to Capital Rourke, who is the committee administrator for the full committee, and that is sufficient. You do not need to make a separate hearing request to the division committee administrator as long as you have made that request to the full committee administrator. Private conversations between committee members and the public, that should usually happen in this hearing room, are not allowed. And if members of the public need to get a message to a member, Mr. Voller, our page, will be available for you to give that note to. Right now, we hope that you will turn off your cell phones or put them on some kind of mode that does not have interference in people talking. I understand that there was some that did occur yesterday in the joint committee, and it just gets to be very distracting. For members, you can drink at the table, but you can't eat. The last part of committee procedures just has to do with when it's appropriate to request per diem. Are there any questions about the committee procedures or something that's not clear? Let me see what else. Today we're going to be hearing three bills, and they have to do with the sales tax system. What Senator Scoy and I have decided not to do is to have lengthy overview sessions of all of our tax systems. We had an overview yesterday in the context of tax reform that was delivered by Commissioners Franz and Showalter. We're not going to repeat that. What we are going to do instead is when a bill comes up, expect the author, along with help from staff, to provide some background of that and context for the bill coming forward. So today, in presenting the bill, I'm going to be speaking in general and some history about remote sellers, not just what this bill is going to be going forward with. The same thing with the proposals that deal with two alternatives dealing with expanding the sales tax to clothing, just kind of what's the history of that, and digging into what the tax expenditure book that we have is in front of us. Senator Gazelka and Senator Anderson have bills that will be heard sometime in the next week dealing with the tax treatment of military pay and pensions, I believe. And so we will ask you to provide some background, a little bit of history over the, last several years of how that pay has been treated, maybe making some comparison so we can get the context with how it's treated in other states, rather than just a parade of people saying we like it or we don't like it. I mean, we'll do the overviews in the context of specific bills that come before us. So any questions about that approach? We encourage bipartisan authorship of the bills. The bills that I'm an author, chief author of, will always have a place for a Republican. And if no one is interested, it will just remain blank. So with that, I'm going to ask Senator Coonan to take over chairing the committee. What I didn't bring with me from my chair there is the list of testifiers on the bills. I wonder if you get that to somebody.
Okay, good. The first bill on the agenda is Senate File 8, and Senator Rest, would you like to present your bill, move your bill and present it?
Thank you. The bill is before us. Each of these three bills will, and that's going to happen next week too, Senator Gazelka, will just be laid over without any action. We will accept amendments, but to make sure that they're in the order that the author wants them, but we're not going to take formal votes on them this early in the game, and I hope that that is agreeable. I hope that is agreeable, Senator Thompson, and Senator Gazelka, and Senator Whitman. Okay. The first bill is a bill that's familiar to all of us. It's made it forward in the legislative process a number of times. It's been the subject of legislative resolutions because the issue has been really controlled by the courts and by the federal government, and it is the affiliate nexus proposal, usually referred to as the Amazon bill, but we just do that for shorthand. We're not trying to cast aspersions on certainly a company that I have spent many a dollar on and appreciate their good service superb service, by the way, particularly when an order got lost. So what the bill does itself is just to define what it means, what solicitor means, for the purposes of nexus. And nexus means that that entity is responsible and accountable to the Minnesota tax system. And what in this instance, it's only to the taxation of goods that are subject to the sales tax. The nexus item, the nexus definition, does not apply to an affiliate for purposes of income tax. It's just the sales tax. The issue began back in the early 1990s when there was a Supreme Court case, the Quill decision in 1992, which said that, or held that, it was brought against North Carolina, North Dakota, that the states could not impose or collect sales tax from remote sellers without federal authority. So the federal authority has been the big issue over the years until the states started acting independently and saying, we just can't wait for the federal government to take the appropriate action to not require states to collect the sales tax, but to permit them to do so if they chose. The furthest we've gotten at the federal level is right now. There is strong bipartisan support in Congress for, I don't know, it goes by various titles, Main Street Fairness, whatever you want to call it. And there was hope that it could be part of the federal tax reform effort. There were some of us that were hoping that that could occur in the legislation passed at the federal level before the end of the year. That didn't happen, and the prospects now, given the atmosphere and the ambiance in Congress, is even less optimistic about the passage of overall tax reform, even though there is bipartisan support for this this legislation. What the bill does is to clarify that the remote sellers are accountable to pay the sales tax that's owed. It's not a new tax. It is leveling the playing field so that a good or service that is currently provided by a brick-and-mortar business in Minnesota, if that service is offered by or product is offered by a remote seller, that the sales tax must be collected and remitted to the Department of Revenue. when you purchase things out of state, as individuals, you are responsible for paying what's the use tax. That's the other side of the coin. Minnesotans, just like a lot of other people, seldom pay attention to that, and they end up not remitting the use tax on an item. A number of years ago, we decided not to make scoff laws of everybody, and so we put it on de minimis level that you didn't need to remit. But still, the concept that the tax is owed is well established. It's well established that the tax is owed. It's just been the federal government's or the judiciary saying that in order for states really to move forward, you needed a federal law passed. I would direct your attention to the revenue estimate, and we will, in the finance committees, we have fiscal notes because you know, you're asking something be spent as an appropriation. In the tax committee, for those of you that are new, we have revenue estimates, and what they are is either an estimate with an explanation of how much revenue will come into the state because of a new policy, or in this instance, I regard it as a clarification of a policy, or how much revenue will be foregone because you're asking for a tax break, a reduction in taxes of some kind, a credit, or or an exemption. And so this bill raises in 2014, because it is effective starting July 1st or June 30th?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rust, for sales and purchases after June 30th.
After so. June 30th, raises $4,550,000 in the first year, and then it goes out for 4 years. And you'll see in these revenue estimates that we won't just get this biennium. We will get a four-year spread of the impact of the proposed change in policy. The other thing to note about revenue estimates is that Minnesota, neither Minnesota nor the federal government for the most part, indulges in dynamic scoring, which is the practice of trying to anticipate consumer or taxpayer behavior if the proposal went into effect. So sometimes we're not happy about these estimates because we say, well, you know, if you do this, you know people are going to do X, Y, and Z. But the revenue department insists on static scoring. The forecast is based on that and so forth. So we just have to live with it. But we do get a broad picture, and of course, we're committed. I think the legislature is committed to looking at our whole budget in terms of a four-year cycle. What we have is what we're encountering as a problem is a structural deficit that goes into the biennium following that. So that's another reason why bills that either give tax relief or that raise money. It's important to see what they do and how they have an effect in the out year. There will be an explanation of the bill. We don't have bill summaries to the extent except in the omnibus bill for each section of a bill. We have an explanation of the bill from the Department of Revenue and then the detail. And certainly, if you have questions about the detail or even the explanation, I'm sure that it's perfectly proper to ask the Department of Revenue to come forward and explain why their methodology, and I hope you will feel comfortable in doing that. In this particular instance, since we don't have it, the department looked at, I mean, our own experience, the department looked at, if you see the first statement in the revenue analysis detail, the estimate was based on first quarter tax collections from Illinois, which has a law similar to this bill, which had become effective July 1st of 2001. So these are always estimates. It's not the same as saying spend $55 million on the University of Minnesota. That's a finite number. These are estimates. Because there are proposals for a change in the law of general law change. Occasionally, we have appropriations within the tax committee, and those will be, for example, formulas that drive LGA, so we get a run, and county aids and so on. Those are actual dollars. Most of the things that come with a revenue estimate are indeed that. They are their estimates. The change in our law has been supported for a long time. I've introduced bills dealing with leveling the playing field for Minnesota retailers. Senator Ortman in the past has done the same, and there have been they've been introduced in the House and the Senate, and we have not yet gotten to the tipping point of adopting it as part of a tax reform package, and I'm very hopeful that that's going to happen this year. I guess I would direct, I'd be willing to stand for questions now about it. If you want more information, I have a lot of documents that you can look at with regard to why this is a good policy to move forward on now. Articles from the Wall Street Journal, certainly from the retailers. I have a letter from Target endorsing the bill this year. They've done so in the past. There are any number of organizations, chambers of commerce, et cetera, that have been supportive of this approach, and I'm willing to share any and all of that information with you as we move forward. I think the bill is whole as it is in front of us now and does not need any amendments. Is that correct, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Pollack?
Mr. Chair and Senator Russ, that's correct.
So there you go.
Okay. Senator Ressia, take questions at this time?
Sure.
Okay. Questions from members? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rest, I see why you're trying to do this, and I would agree with you that it is a tax that maybe isn't being collected. But can you give us a background of where it's been on a federal level? I mean, it would have made more sense, but I don't know if that's going to happen. But, you know, where it is federally, and that'd be helpful.
Senator Rest.
Well, 10 years ago, I started serving on the NCSL's Executive Task Force on sales tax policy, and the Amazon, so-called Amazon tax or situation, has been of concern to states since then, understanding that as individual states dared to move forward on their own, the best solution would be a federal one. Going along with that was all of the attention that was being made for the streamlined sales tax agreement, to which Minnesota is of that agreement is a member. Sometimes people confuse simply dealing with online sales tax policy. They think of it being the same thing as streamline, but they're not. The streamlined sales tax agreement, and I think we are recently, but currently, wherever the department is, in compliance, there's a little wrinkle sometimes along the way, is an attempt, the way it has an impact on the solicitor nexus is that retailers of all kinds objected to the disarray, lack of consistency in definitions of goods and services that were subject or exempt from any state sales tax system. And it was felt that if states could agree on definitions of things, and sometimes they're arbitrary, quite frankly. I mean, we always hear the example of, is Twix candy, or is it a cookie and therefore food? And it may seem like candy to all of us, and I think Commissioner Franz talks about this. But because of the flour content, the percentage of the flour content, it is considered it's considered food. And so we don't tax it in Minnesota. It's not subject to the sales tax, but we do tax candy. And that particular argument on that particular product was a discussion at the streamlined sales tax that only a few of us could love. That's the goal of the streamlined sales tax, that when there is a critical mass of states that can't agree on definitions within the administration of the sales tax, having nothing to do with sales tax rates or anything like that, has nothing to do with that, but the definitions whereby retailers across the country could rely on whether an item was subject to the sales tax or not by the definition, the universal definition. If you were able to do that, then there was a more powerful argument, in my mind at least, for the online retailers could not claim confusion over whether in this state it's taxed or in that state it's not taxed, because the definitions of candy were, and some states don't tax candy, I guess. I don't know. Yep. That's not our job. In the streamlined sales tax, it was just dealing with the definitions for streamlining the administration of the tax. But it helps when you want to bring forward something like the affiliate nexus to have that growing number. Sometimes people fall off the wagon there, but growing number of states that agree on the definitions by being members of streamlined sales tax. And I don't know. It looks like 2, 4, 6, 8. There are about 25 states, half the states, that are members of the streamline group. And again, sometimes we fall out of compliance on a technical, something that's technical. Sometimes get out of compliance on a more major policy issue, but so it's been around for 20 years, and it first started, and I told I asked Senator Scoy that when I got going too long here, he should just go like cut it off. But you asked. it got started in 1992, but it was at a time when there were very few online sales. What it was, the issue was with remote sellers who were selling items through catalogs. For example, Wisconsin's Land's End. The Land's End issue has gone away because now Land's End has real nexus because it has stores in Minnesota. So that's not, they collect sales tax. But for a number of years, it was the catalog sales that were the focus of the attention before people started purchasing so much more online through remote sellers. So it began with concern about the catalog sales of companies that otherwise would not be subject to the nexus laws, but because they were selling so heavily in states, we were challenging. States were beginning to challenge them for exactly the same policy reason that that we do now with Amazon. With regard to the federal bill, Amazon no longer opposes it. The key for them is, well, one of the keys is the so-called small business exemption. How many sales do you, what the gross receipts and sales do you need to reach before you become subject to this, the states claiming that you owe the tax? And that number, as you might expect, in negotiating with the online sellers has gone up. And I believe it's now maybe at 5 million, and others want it to be higher than that. eBay wants it to be like 50 million, and if you get to that, there's only one company that would be subject to it. So that's probably la-la land for an exemption. In this bill, in the state, the exemption is $10,000 for a Minnesota resident before they become being compelled to collect a tax that's owed. And again, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Pollack, when these bills have been come forth before, has that minimum level ever been different?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, are you asking about in Minnesota when these bills have come forward? No, I believe they haven't. It's always been the $10,000.
It's always been $10,000.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Rest, any further, or should we go to testifiers? Okay, the first testifier on the list, Rochelle Westland.
Mr. Chairman, I might suggest, I'll just move back there, and you might want to just ask people to come forward three at a time, and then we can be more efficient in the use of the testifiers.
Okay, thank you. And then next on the list, Roberta Bonoff and Nancy Breemeyer, and I hope I'm pronouncing these names correctly, but before you testify, identify yourself for the record, and thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. I am Rochelle Westland, and I represent the Minnesota Retailers Association. The Retailers Association is comprised of over 1,500 storefronts statewide, including large and small businesses. I come before you this morning in support of Senate File 8, which is the affiliate nexus provision. As the law currently stands, online-only retailers are not collecting sales tax from consumers at the point of sale. Although this tax is owed by the consumer, few consumers remit this tax, and enforcement is nearly impossible. By not enforcing the collection of this tax, remote retailers create the perception that the internet is tax-free. and therefore costs less. This loophole has created a competitive disadvantage for Minnesota bricks and mortar retailers who are required to collect tax at the point of sale and remit that tax to the state. Closing this loophole is not a tax increase. It's about compliance. It modernizes the tax code for a 21st century marketplace. A sale is a sale, whether that sale occurs online or at a local business. Internet sales have grown at a phenomenal rate. They're expected to reach $250 billion by 2014. Online-only remote retailers can easily utilize existing technology to collect sales tax. The software and web applications are already developed and have been put into place by numerous multi-channel retailers who choose to adhere to the law. Legislation to level the playing field for sellers would go a long way to help Minnesota merchants compete fairly in today's marketplace. Currently, Minnesota retail businesses employ 482,000 people, accounting for over 17% of Minnesota's employment. Retailers train our workforce and contribute to skill development. The competitive disadvantages that retailers are facing due to this tax loophole decreases sales. Decreased sales not only mean lost revenue for businesses, but fewer resources that are able to be invested into our community and into workforce development. This deeply flawed and outdated system hurts small businesses. We understand that a federal solution is needed to ensure a level playing field. However, if it were not for states like Minnesota taking the lead and passing bills like this one, the federal bill would not be making the progress that it is. This is an important step for Minnesota, and we would greatly appreciate your support. Today with me, I have three members of the Main Street Fairness Coalition. They are the faces of retail. They represent the jobs and the storefronts that make up our communities. If I may, I would like to yield to them so that they may share with you how this loophole in the tax system has affected their businesses.
All right, thank you. And if all three of you could stay at the table until you're all finished, and then we'll take questions from members at that time. So thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Bonhoff.
Chairman and members of the subcommittee, I'm Roberta Bonhoff, and I am the CEO and president of Creative Kid Stuff. If you don't know Creative Kid Stuff, we are a specialty toy retailer. Thank you for having us here today to speak on e-fairness. I believe this is my third time. I was truly hoping that the bill would have been passed last year and was very disappointed that it failed in the last hours. Creative Kid Stuff has operated in the state of Minnesota for 30 years. We are committed to play and the utmost important value of children and families. We have 6 stores in the metro area and employ over 200 people. We also have 4 airport stores and a national online business that makes up 13.2% of our business. I've had the privilege to run this company for the last 15 years. I have seen a lot and have experienced many ups and downs in many different business cycles. It is an ever-changing market. Both consumer expectations and competition keep us on our toes. And we are always up for the challenge. So I request you hear what I have to say today as just plain fact. I'm not whining. I'm not complaining. It's just fact. And it's the facts of running a business today in 2013. I equate it to your job, which is running the state's business. Fact number one, there is room in the marketplace for online and bricks and mortar. We need both, but no matter how you make a sale, you should pay taxes. A sale is a sale. Creative Kid Stuff has both, and we pay taxes. Fact number two, online-only retailers have an unfair advantage on 2 major points. One is perception. Perception is that online is tax-free. The other is reality, which is the 5 to 10% that they don't pay. If you're not paying those taxes, no matter what state you're in, depending on the different tax level, that money drops basically to their bottom line. And it can be used for discounting, underpricing, free freight, or is just money that they can put into their marketing pool, which is how you grow your business online. Fact number three. Bricks and mortar retailers contribute to the community. We need local jobs. We train our youth. sales tax revenue. I ask, who is going to help keep those roads and bridges in repair, library and state offices open, and so much more? Who's going to donate to Children's Hospital, St. David's, Second Harvest, Crisis Nursery, Pacer, Cheerful Givers, and local schools? We contribute to all of those. And the schools' budgets have already been cut. These are just a few of the charities that need local businesses to support them. And to you, and do you want your communities to go dark? Small towns all over the state have struggled to maintain vital retailers. Why are we making it even harder for them? Fact number four, our state needs the revenue, plain and simple. We have a budget to maintain and balance, and it should come from all sectors. And fact number five, I believe that the citizens of the state of Minnesota would rather have the tax that is owned collected rather than see anything happen to the communities they love and live in and the retailers that they trust go away. This is not a new tax. Competition, we'll take it any day. Part of our world, an unfair playing field created by decisions made prior to the onset of a billion-dollar sector of business, have to be reevaluated and changed to meet the modern age. I really thank you all for spending the time to look at this and to look at this again and to really look hard. All we ask is a fair playing field where the rules aren't made for us. We understand competition. We do it every day. I respectfully ask for your support. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bonoff. And Ms., I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this, Breemeyer?
Very well. Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen of the committee, good morning. My name is Nancy Breemeyer, and I'm here representing the businesses of Metro IBA, which I am a part of. I own two small businesses, one retail and one service. This seven-year organization is different than most chambers and other independent business groups. In order to be a business member with Metro IBA, the ownership must be 51% of the businesses and must reside within a 50-mile radius of the state capitol building, along with other requirements that make them independently owned. Independent business alliances are growing across the country and in the state of Minnesota. The complexity of sales tax on its own is confusing, and for the most part, an honor system until you get audited. The locally owned independent small business's biggest obstacle is that level playing field. As a governing body, you cannot make a level playing field on many of the items that can make our success a certainty. However, turning a blind eye to the non-collection of sales tax from companies doing internet business that do not even pay property tax or provide jobs for our state is very disappointing. There is no doubt compliance to this legislation is going to be cumbersome. For most large internet businesses, they already have the processes in place to collect the sales tax. We are just adding one more state. For the small business, all we have to do is any search engine put in the zip code and say sales tax for that zip code, and it will give us the rate. If you want to make sure that it is a taxable item, you can find that through any search engine also. There are also many programs out there now that have grown that work with many of our accounting systems. But the bottom line, it is a business expense. It will cost some money to be in compliance of sales tax. But you're going to be adding to our bottom line, and that's very, very important for the state of Minnesota. If you truly believe that small business is the economic engine of Minnesota and that more money is kept in the community if you buy something in the community with a brick-and-mortar store, then Senate File 8 is long overdue legislation. This non-collection is yet another competitive advantage and another attempt to undermine Main Street, Minnesota. Metro IBA encourages legislation that attempts to level that playing field. We ask that you make this legislation into law. Thank you.
Okay, and I'll before the three of you stay there, and I'll have Mr. Michael Weinhagen come up and testify if you can pull a chair up. Thank you. Welcome to the committee and introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Michael Weinhagen. I'm the owner of Weinhagen Tire Company in St. Paul. I thank you for the opportunity to give us to give me the opportunity to share our story and perspective. As I said earlier, I'm the owner of a small family-owned tire and automotive repair business located less than a mile from here, a mile south of here on Wabasha Street in St. Paul. Our business was started by my grandfather less than 2 years out of high school in 1922. And as you can imagine, we're quite proud of the fact that we've lasted this long. I'm third generation in the business, and I'm afforded the opportunity to come up and speak with you because the fourth generation is down there right now taking care of business. So it is a true family business that you know, that we're very, very proud of as we go along. Over the years, as you can imagine, our business has weathered many, many storms and has been able to make the necessary adjustments to keep moving forward. Ours is a very competitive business. I mean, you can remember the day where there was a gas station on every corner, and these were our competitors. And there has been a shift and movement in our business. We think we understand and embrace the competitive nature of our business, as is indicated by the longevity of our business. We continually make adjustments to our business model to adapt to the ever-changing competitive environment and attempt to offer our customers quality service and products at a competitive price to keep them coming back. And, you know, as a third-generation owner, I'm dealing with fourth- and fifth-generation customers. So that's really, you know, how our business is built. And we are on the very small end of the business spectrum, I guess, is what it would come down to. You know, we understand and know that larger competitors have purchasing advantages. That's how it's been forever. The more you buy, the lower your price. What we don't understand is how can we give them another, in my particular case in St. Paul, it's 7.625% advantage over us right out of the box. They start at 7.625% lower than we are because the perception, again, is that you do not have to pay sales tax if you buy it online. Now, you know, obviously, you know, we started life as a tire company. We've expanded into auto repair, so we have diversified. But really, one of the core components of our business is tires, and tires are sold online on a regular basis. You know, we pay the 7.625% because we live and work in the state of Minnesota. We don't spend a great deal of time or effort agonizing over things we can't control. We largely concentrate on our business at hand. That being said, we think it's wrong that an online-only retailer has a significant advantage over those of us who operate and employ Minnesotans. Once again, I'd like to emphasize that ours is a very competitive business. As such, manufacturers reward volume customers with additional discounts on purchases. When the online retailer starts with a 7.625% advantage and increases their volume, they become eligible for more discounts, 2, 3, 4, 5%. You know, the additional price advantage makes it very difficult for a company my size to continue to compete and really put stress on our business. We're prepared and eager to face the competition in the marketplace, and we always have been. You know, I mean, Tires Plus started in Minnesota, very, very aggressive competitor, and you know, we found a way to survive with them in the marketplace. As Ms. Westland pointed out in her opening remarks, this is a matter of compliance. Okay, we've talked about fair playing field, and that's a very, 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 very important component. Don't penalize us because we invest in brick and mortar, we train and employ Minnesotans, and comply with the tax codes. Let's have everyone comply with the tax codes, and then let us compete in the open marketplace.
All right, thank you. Any questions for any of the testifiers from committee members? Okay, thank you all. Okay, the next testifiers I'll ask to come forward, Gary Carlson and Bo Barrettson. I'm hoping I'm getting that close. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. We represent 831 cities across the state of Minnesota. I'm here today in support of Senate File 8. We have testified in past committee hearings and in past legislative sessions also in support of affiliate nexus type legislation. Let me also stress that over the years we've supported the entire streamlined sales tax effort that has been ongoing for a long time. And we also support federal legislation, the Marketplace Fairness Act and the Main Street Fairness Act, as broader solutions to the problem. Let me briefly tell you why we support this. It may not quite be apparent why cities would care. Cities, number one, are your partners at the local level. And as I look at the state budget and state budget documents over the last decade or so, you can see that the sales tax is not keeping up with the broad array of state taxes. It's actually a declining piece. A slightly declining piece of your budget, and finding ways to really solidify that as a revenue source for the state obviously would help with your budget issues, and that has a trickle-down effect at the local level. But let me tell you that our city officials really don't look at this purely as a budgetary issue, your budget or our budget. They really look at this as an economic development issue. Cities in Minnesota really are one of your big economic development partners. We spend a lot of time and money trying to create jobs, attract businesses, bring them to Minnesota, and part of that is making sure that we have a very vibrant and vital retail sector. We see the erosion of their ability to compete as a problem for our economic development efforts, for our ability to try to attract and retain new businesses. So we really do feel that the more important aspect of this legislation and the broader federal legislation is to make Minnesota a more vibrant state and to solidify our retail sector. We will continue to support the federal legislation. We have most recently communicated with our congressional delegation about the need to pass the Marketplace Fairness Act. It came up as a part of the fiscal cliff negotiations. Unfortunately, it faltered, but we will continue to work with Congress on that as well. But in the meantime, we do urge you to pass Senate File 8. It would be a good step for Minnesota to try to solidify our revenues and make our businesses more competitive. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. And go ahead, Mr. Berenson.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bo Berenson. I'm here representing the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC is a voluntary, nonpartisan, statewide organization that assists the state's 87 counties in providing effective county governance. On behalf of AMC, I'd like to also testify in support of Senate File 8 and share with you our support for initiatives aimed at requiring online-only retailers to collect and remit state sales tax. Our members' support will mirror almost exactly what you heard from Mr. Carlson from the League. It is viewed as an economic development issue by our county commissioners. Local retailers provide jobs for our citizens, economic growth for our communities, and support the local tax base that allows our local governments to provide essential services for our residents. Our organization believes that current tax policy, which requires local brick-and-mortar retailers to collect sales tax from consumers but not their out-of-state online competitors, puts our local business community at a disadvantage. More broadly, counties do have a strong interest in seeing the state adopt tax reform that will bring greater stability to state revenues in future years. As Mr. Carlson said, it's clear that a shift to remote sales is eroding the sales tax base in our state, and that this erosion will likely accelerate as more retail commerce moves online, unless steps are taken to ensure that sales tax is collected on those purchases. And with that, Mr. Chair, thank you for the time to share our position.
All right, thank you. And questions from members? Okay, thank you both. Okay, Beth Cadoon and Jill Larson, please. Okay, go ahead, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. It's an organization that represents about 2,400 businesses around the state of Minnesota, both rural and metro, and representing both basically all industry sectors as well. I won't repeat all the testimony you heard from the retailers. We support all the concepts and the issues that they addressed. I just want to go on record saying that Minnesota Chamber is in strong support of Senate File 8. We believe it's necessary to help level, and it's an important step to helping level the playing field in sales tax collection requirements between online retailers, remote online vendors versus brick and mortar Minnesota stores. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Jill Larson. I represent the Minnesota Business Partnership. For those of you that aren't familiar with the organization, our members, we have about 110 CEOs of the large employers of Minnesota, including some of the retail groups that you've heard from earlier. Again, I won't repeat other folks' testimony. We also support this legislation. Thank Senator Rest for bringing it forward. This is about leveling the playing field, making our Main Street retailers not at a competitive disadvantage to the online-only retailers. We understand a federal solution is probably the perfect solution, but this is a great step forward. And as you heard earlier, Congress is probably more willing to act because states are acting. And so if we just add Minnesota to the list, I think that's just one further step that will help Congress take the federal action that needs to be taken. So thanks for your time. Be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you. Questions for the testifiers? All right. Thank you both.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just call me.
Oh, good. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Ress, is Ms. Von Mosch going to come to the table with you? Good. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Scoy, Ms. Von Mosch from the department have asked to make a comment with regard to the history of the governor's support for this proposal. But before she does that, I wanted to make another just one more comment about why or a reason also why Amazon has gotten to a neutral position with regard to these proposals being enacted in the states. One of their biggest concerns was retroactivity. And there is no retroactivity in this bill, and there's no retroactivity in the federal bill. They did not want people going back and claiming additional dollars in order to come into compliance. So the proposals are all forward going. They're not looking backwards. And I think that's an important element.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rest, I know primarily we're having a policy discussion about this, but maybe this Ms. Von Mosch in her testimony could talk a little bit about the revenue estimate that the department has put together. I think as I listened to the testimony, I was left with the impression that there was going to be more activity taxed than the revenue estimate would lead me to believe. And if you could explain to me a little bit of the rationale why this is this relatively small revenue estimate.
Ms. Von Mosch.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. My name is Susan Von Mosch. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Tax Policy from the Department of Revenue. And I just want to remind people, I think most people are aware that the governor has had an affiliate nexus provision in his budget the past 2 years. And we view this provision, as many of the prior testifiers have commented on, as being really a fairness provision in terms of treating retailers, whether they're online or whether they're Main Street bricks and mortar, the same with equal treatment for tax collections. We have also expressed our support this summer and with letters to our federal representatives for the marketplace fairness provisions that are moving forward federally. That really is the better solution for Minnesota and many states, in that we would be able to get much more revenue if the federal government does take action. And so we have also been expressing our support for those provisions in Congress. Regarding the revenue estimate, I think, Senator Scoy, you're referring to maybe the last bullet in the well. First of all, let me start by saying that originally, when this revenue estimate came out many years ago, actually, it did have quite a large score, and it was brought down as we started monitoring information from other states that were enacting these types of provisions. We started gathering information and working with them to see what their collection history was like. And we have continued to monitor what happens in Illinois. Illinois is subject to a lawsuit right now their provision, their law is being litigated at this point in time. That is still the state that we have been using, and the original estimate, the estimate that we're looking at today, actually does take into account, if you look at the last bullet on the second page, that that the national retailers have dropped some of their solicitor arrangements when states have enacted this type of provision. So in the attempt to have the most accurate revenue estimate possible without it being overly inflated, we have adjusted the numbers to take that into account. I would have to go back and talk with Dr. Wilson to see if that was adjusted or how that was adjusted in this most recent estimate.
Senator Scoia.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And Ms. Von Marsh, if the federal government was to act, would the impact on the state go back to the size of an estimate that we originally had before you started to see what was going on with the with them removing their nexus provisions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoia, if the federal provision were to pass, right now we have an estimate that is a little bit old. It's from 2011 because the federal legislation deals not only with affiliate nexus, which is actually really a fairly small portion of what's going on. It deals with e-commerce, catalog sales. The estimate we have from 2011 on that provision would be $400 million.
Thank you.
Another reason for the to urge the federal government to bring a tax system into the 21st century.
Okay, anything further on the bill, Senator Ress? Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Ress, first off, thank you for your gracious welcome to the committee. I'm looking forward to working with you and getting to know you a little bit better. I appreciate that. This one hits home to me because we actually had a Best Buy close down in Lakeville quite recently. Now, of course, I know nothing about their internal financials, and I don't know if this had anything to do with it, but certainly Best Buy would be an example of a company that we all know and many of us love in Minnesota that would be adversely impacted by the current tax situation. So it has never made sense to me that we should put our Minnesota businesses to a disadvantage. I think the couple of struggles I have with how to deal with this is technically it's correct. This would not be a tax increase because it is a compliance issue, right? If I order my television from an online retailer, theoretically I'm supposed to mail in the sales tax. As a practical matter, people don't. And so for the average consumer, if he or she is preparing to buy a large article online, once this goes into effect, from the consumer perspective, it is a tax increase. So I'm glad to see that you're looking at reducing the tax rates overall to hopefully make this revenue neutral. And then I also think it's very important that every single testifier that came up here really validated this idea that tax policy has a tremendous impact on business and commerce in the state. And I think this was a good first bill to have because, you listen to one retailer after another come up here and make the case that if we have an onerous, burdensome tax system, it really impacts business within the state. And so hopefully this is, in my opinion, the right thing to do. Hopefully we can truly do it in a revenue neutral way and then be as sensitive in all of our tax discussions about how it impacts our local businesses and state businesses as we are in this. So thank you for talking about this issue because I took the same position when this was talked about in the last couple of years. I don't see how it makes sense not to do this, but I hope we can do it in a way that doesn't penalize Minnesota taxpayers.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Thompson, thank you for your comments. Some of the bills that are coming forward don't have do not have enough of an impact in the sales tax system individually to get to a revenue neutral rate. This bill only raises $4 million. Think of a half cent on the sales tax, which we'll get into with a sales tax on clothing proposals, is around $300 million. There, you can have an impact with a single bill, but as we go forward and undertake a real review of the sales tax system, there is the opportunity, if you took them all together, to make it a what we I don't know if it's the right term to use, but to make it revenue neutral if we choose by lowering the rate. When you take all of the proposals together, the proposal I'll have tomorrow on digital goods is the same way. It doesn't, and that's a discussion for tomorrow. With the difference between taxing a good and a service, just taxing the goods themselves, broadening the base there, doesn't raise enough revenue to warrant a reduction in the rate. The sales tax on clothing, obviously, more controversial, but also. Allows even within that single bill to reduce the rate by almost a half a cent. But it's a very good point to keep in mind to what extent does it make good economic sense as we are expanding the base or increasing compliance to lower the rate, which I consider a hallmark of good sales tax policy. Well, good income tax policy, too, for that matter.
Okay, anything further from members? Closing comments on this bill, Senator Est?
No, Mr. Chairman, I would just request that you lay it over.
Okay. Senate File 8 is laid over, and the next bill on the agenda is Senate File 9. Senator Est.
Mr. Chairman, the next two bills, and I think I might talk about them together because they're alternative approaches, but you can see on your testifiers list is nobody there is going to be in favor of it. But
Senator Rest, just for the record, the next two bills in are Senate File 9 and Senate File 11.
And Senate File 11. I'd like to go back a little bit in regard to the proposals to extend the sales tax to clothing accompanied by a revenue-neutral rate. I have introduced such proposals in the past on any number of occasions, and perhaps most recently in a very broad tax package in 2009 in a bill that phased out the corporate income tax, that approach the statewide business tax paid by Minnesota businesses, the state general levy, that within sales tax provided the upfront exemption for capital equipment, that got rid of the June accelerated payments, and extended the sales tax to clothing, and that also may be a surprise to some of you, created a fourth-tier income tax rate that started at $250,000 of taxable income for married joint filers, and another rate that I guess the rate I had there was 8.75. Up from the current third-tier rate at 7.85. And my bill was a response to a number of initiatives and commissions and task forces that then-Governor Pawlenty had set into place where one of them in particular was looking at the effects of the tax system on the Minnesota business economy, and we can find copies of this if you're interested. It was called it was the Governor's 21st Century Tax Reform Commission. And the title of the report was Minnesota's Millennium, Launching a New Generation of Competitive Leadership and Economic Growth, and it was produced in 2009. It made a number of recommendations, not only for how to make the burden on taxpayers, business taxpayers, more equitable in a 21st century economy, but it also suggested, which sometimes doesn't happen, how do you pay for it? How do you make it, how do you make the whole system fairer, spread the burden in a more fair way, et cetera? And I would, if you would like to have it, we can find copies of it. And what they proposed was to, as one of their general recommendations, was extending the sales tax base to a broader range of consumer products and consumer services. They didn't name anything in particular, but they did advise avoiding increasing those items that were already subject to not imposing the sales tax on those goods that were already exposed to the excise tax or wholesale taxes, such as motor fuel. Some people want to, you know, think about not just increasing the gas tax, but putting a sales tax on gasoline, on the price, not by volume like we charge now, and that that would not be sound tax policy. They also made the distinction, and you will be able to see that in another report that also can make available to you, done in this time in 2011, I believe, a presentation from the Department of Revenue of the difference between, and I think it's an important difference, the difference between consumption taxes and taxes that are in the sales tax system that is imposed on the final purchases, so that they are advising, and we can think about this as we go forward, not to tax, impose a sales tax on business-to-business services, but consider the taxable act to be the point of sale to a consumer. We're going to see some proposals coming forward where the people involved in the business themselves, where a sales tax is imposed on at the wholesale level, are asking for it to be moved forward to the point of sale to the individual consumer. And I think that's going to be a discussion within the tax expenditures that we should understand and make some choices about as we go forward. So the proposal that I have two proposals here. One of them is I think besides people, whether they would support it or oppose broadening the base and lowering the rate, that is a little bit more problematic. You'll see with, I believe it is Senate file number 9, that bill takes the approach that we want to protect modest income folks in making their purchases of clothing. For some, it's a very emotional issue, but to protect them immediately at the point of sale by saying that the first $200 of the price of any article of clothing would not be subject to the sales tax, and only those amounts of an article of clothing that are above $200 would be subject to the sales tax. So if you bought an item of clothing for $190, you don't pay anything. If you buy an item that costs $210, the sales tax would be imposed on $10. And then the assumption there would also be if we could estimate what that would raise, that there would be an accompanying lowering of the rate. You can see on this handout, this is from other states, something from other states about what it would raise. This is the first I've seen this page, so I can't get into a lot of detail about it right this second. But it was difficult to give an estimate for, and you can see in the revenue estimate that the impact is unknown. It does refer to other states. I believe it's Massachusetts that has that imposes a sales tax on clothing based on the price you pay. But some other states that have looked at this do not exempt the first dollars. They impose it on an article of clothing that simply costs more than that. Much easier to estimate, but it's like if you pay more than $175, in this case maybe $200, the sales tax is only imposed on articles of clothing that cost more than that, but it's imposed on the whole thing. And that was not the intent of giving immediate relief to low and modest income families. So in an otherwise obviously regressive tax system. I don't know that I would call it the silver lining at all, but the opportunity is to pay attention to tax policy of broad-based items with lower rates, broad-based systems with lower rates. We're going to see that in the income tax system as well. As we look at tax expenditures, and you'll have the book, be here for you to take a look at. In fact, we could do that right now with item 402, if you want to take a look at that in the book. And these are not by page numbers. They're by item numbers. I think that's what it is, 402. Yeah. There is for the four-year period now going out to 2015, and the tax expenditure book is done on a four-year basis, and we're in the middle of the one that we have now. Tells you what the clothing tax expenditure is, and I think it's also important as we're looking at ways in which we're expanding the tax base to understand what it doesn't apply to. And again, this is an issue within streamlined, what's clothing and what's not clothing. Doesn't matter if you tax it or not, but what's clothing and what's not clothing. So, for example, I don't know exactly the history, but some years ago, we had a concern from people who make their own clothes. And they, if you bought clothing in a store, you didn't pay tax on it. But if you bought the materials and the zippers and the buttons and so forth to make the clothes, you paid sales tax on those. And so we passed in the tax code for Minnesota an exemption for that so that it's a level playing field argument again. Purchasing clothes or making clothes should be considered the same. The exemption currently, the tax expenditure currently, does not apply to jewelry, handbags, billfolds, an item of clothing, a fur coat, you pay sales tax on it. But that's about the only one that's in there in addition to sports clothing that's sold for exclusive use in a sporting activity, or work-related safety articles. So as we're talking about the definitions of these items, proposals that you would have as well, I hope that you will look back at the tax expenditure budget compare that with what the revenue estimate comes in for your discussion of proposals. You may also want to look at 401, which is the tax expenditure for not taxing food, quite a bit higher than that for taxing clothing at, for 2012, $681.7 million. I don't know of anyone, although it happens in other states, and it's because of a different tax cultures or where they get their revenues from in order to respond to the needs and wants and demands of their citizens. They have sales tax on food, but with very low rates on everything, and they tax services and wide range of things. Almost everything is included, and they have a policy that you're including everything, you can go either way, include everything and then by assumption and then have exemptions, or everything is exempt unless you say it's taxed. I mean, you know, they can, that can do that either way. So the $200 exemption is, I think it has, as given the policy is there, it has, it's attractive because it, at the point of sale, provides some relief for those of us who seldom in our lives have ever paid more than $200 for anything that was a piece of clothing. The other approach in Senate File 11 is a more traditional one, and is the one actually that is recommended in the Millennium Report, and that is to recognize that the sales tax is a regressive system, although the Suits Index, which is a measure of Senate File 11, as I propose to amend it, is a more traditional way of addressing the regressivity of the sales tax system. Although, with regard to the particular item of clothing, the particular category of clothing, the sales tax is no more or less regressive than it is for anything else. In fact, it might be a little bit more less regressive because people of great resources tend to spend more money on a single item of clothing with no greater utility than someone who spends much less on that. You can keep just as warm in a coat that cost a couple of $100 as you can in a coat that cost $800 or $900. The utility is not diminished. The so, Mr. Chairman, to make sure that the bill is in the way in which I want people to think about it, I would offer, assuming it's the A1 amendment.
Okay, Senator Rest, we'll lay over Senate File 9 and Senate File 11 is before us. And
okay, fine.
And mm-hmm. Senator Rest moves the A1 amendment.
Thank you. I didn't have any amendments for Senate File 9. At this point, that's the one with the $200.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I had a question about Senate File 9,
okay.
The $200 provision. And Senator S., isn't that just an invitation for mischief? Like when I buy a suit the next time, I'll probably just buy a pair of pants and then I'll buy a jacket. And so I'll get them both for under the $200?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scoy, that. That is an issue with any kind of cliff in any tax policy, whether it's an income tax or some sort of credit or whatever, that you can game the system. The only attractive or the attractive point for me in that was that the relief was immediate. And the approach is taken in Senate File 11 is delayed, but it's less susceptible to the gaming of it that you just mentioned. I don't know what the in the other states that have imposed cliffs like that, what their experience has been with the gamesmanship in the system. But that's it's something to find out. But I'm sure it's not going to end up recommending it.
And
Mr. Chair, maybe Senator Rest, when we talk about Senate File 11, one of the things that has occurred to me and others is perhaps the idea of a sales tax holiday a couple, three times a year. Is that something that you've contemplated, and do you have any thoughts on it? As we move forward in the discussion, you don't have to answer it now if you don't want.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, under the current law and under the current streamlined sales tax agreement, if we did a sales tax holiday, we'd be out of compliance. However, and we'd be out of compliance, too, with the $200 exclusion. I'm less concerned about that going forward. If the federal government acts, because in the Marketplace Fairness Act, because as I understand it, and I certainly would welcome correction, the language to allow states to do the remote sales is fairly permissive and voluntary. And so it doesn't require you to be a streamlined sales tax state, that is the consistent administration of tax definitions, to enjoy that compliance initiative. So Minnesota may want to consider, like maybe some others, well, so what's the benefit of staying strictly with streamline? And I think that is, maybe it's not, if they don't act on it quickly, that may be or if they do act on it quickly, that opens up a whole nother discussion about how we give tax relief within any given system, and particularly with regard to what the federal feds are doing with regard to the marketplace fairness.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, going on to Senate File 11, and then you can have the people that want to talk about it, no matter how we do it, they don't like it. But I think Senator Ortman has a question.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I do have a comment about both of them, but I wanted to say first that it's pretty challenging to do any kind of tax reform, because if you do it in a piecemeal fashion, people say, well, do it in a comprehensive fashion. And then if you do it in a comprehensive fashion, people say, well, I think we should do this one step at a time. And so I see what you're trying to do here, and I appreciate all your hard work, because I know there's a lot of hard work and a lot of guts that go into doing something like you're doing.
Yes, you know.
I do know. I am puzzled, though, about these proposals, the clothing tax. Because if you point out the fact that we have a tax expenditure amount of like $318 million, but these proposals only raise, you know, $3, $5, $6 million, what are you accomplishing? And I wonder the cost of having imposed this. Now you've got a tax credit that has a huge administrative cost to it, not to mention the competitive cost to the Mall of America and other businesses that now can tell the United States and the whole world we don't have a sales tax. It's a huge draw for us. And so I'm wondering, have we really accomplished enough to make it really worth it? And I hope you'll address that.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Ortman, The revenue estimate we had gotten on the first bill on Senate File 9, the $200, it says unknown. And I guess it's just drawing a blank on your name, but our fiscal analyst that's provided this for where the estimate of where the first dollar taxed would be. I wanted us to look at something like that. I hope somebody will come in with a bill that says, what if we did a sales tax holiday on everything? You know, what is that a boon to the economy? Is that going to stimulate jobs? What is that going to do for Minnesota retailers to in going forward? But to do that, you have to put the streamlined sales tax aside, which we may be able to do. The revenue estimate on the clothing in Senate File 11, however, provides for the a low-income tax credit, income tax credit, and then, and this is an issue raised by Senator Thompson, then lowers the rate accordingly, even within this one item. Some of these others, they don't raise enough money to, in and of themselves, lower the overall rate to a revenue-neutral rate. But as we look at and are building a sales tax article and look at what the governor proposes, and I have no idea what that's going to be, absolutely none, I think we'll have a better feel for if we have a broad enough base, how much lower can we have the rate? And I would argue that is a positive thing for competitiveness with those states that have that collect sales tax on already on that broad base to have a low rate. And what happens then, in my mind, is that you also add stability to a system, a sales tax system in this instance, that is very volatile. Also volatile, as you well know, is the corporate income tax. What's not volatile, unfortunately, I shouldn't say that, it's not unfortunate, but what's not volatile is the property tax system. The dollars, the property never goes away. It's there. We can decide how we're going to tax it or give opportunities for local governments to tax it, but it is not. The reason why we often look to that is because it's so stable. You can own a grocery store and move across a state line, but you can't take your farm and move it. You can't do that. So the stability of the various systems do not always speak to the regressivity of them. And so, you know, it's a real discussion to take place. But if I could get the bill like I want it, we can continue the discussion. Mr. Chairman, I would move the A1 amendment now. And it's an author's amendment, but after it's adopted, I'll explain it.
All right. Thank you, Senator Rest. Senate File 11 is before us, and we'll vote on the A1 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this provides is a refundable income tax credit where you would fill out a form or check a box or whatever. It perhaps could just be automatic, for that matter. Whereby a family, married filing joint filers, get a $60 credit, and then $10 additional credit for dependents up to a certain number, after that $5. And this is not a cliff like the $200 one was. It is a phase out, so that for every 1% of income above 200% of the poverty line, which is about $40,000 or so, give or take, for a family of four, that's who would get the full amount. And then it would be reduced as the as your income gets higher. That's been a fairly traditional way of dealing with the regressive nature of broadening the sales tax base, and it's one that I think brings an element of sensitivity to this particular broad-based broadening of the base. With regard to the competitiveness, I think that is an issue that we'll need to keep our eye on with regard to other states that do not have a broad base in their sales tax as either where they have a silo, they have a very narrow base, and they have a very high rate, and that does not produce, and see that in this report as well, that does not produce a stability in a system going forward in the 21st century. We need to, in my mind, as a basic policy position, to give up the 1950s. We need to be thinking about modernizing all of our systems. We're going to be taking a major look, Senator Scoy, a very major look at the property tax system and the levies for schools. Are we still operating, you know, back in the 70s with regard to how we approach property tax and its role in paying for our schools? And, you know, what happened really in 2001? Did that improve things, or was it also a throwback? The broadening of base to clothing certainly is the biggest item that I'm aware of, but to doing it in other areas, and when then altogether lowering the rate, I think is a way that we should approach tax policy. We should do it with the income tax system as well. Look for what we consider to be either obsolete or unhelpful deductions and credits. And instead of looking at raising the rates in the income tax system, we could possibly look at lowering the rates if we had a broader base. Does it create winners and losers? That always comes with a reform of some kind, and you can't always hold every single item or interest within the state harmless in order to do that. So, Mr. Chairman, that's my presentation, and I look forward to the I didn't realize the time was getting away from us. I'd like to have the rest of the time devoted to the testifiers. And we'll come back to this, obviously.
Okay, we have two testifiers, Rochelle Westland and Maureen Bush. All right, welcome to the committee, and Ms. Westland, if you would like to start.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, I'm Rochelle Westland, representing the Minnesota Retailers Association. I sit before you now in opposition to modifying sales tax on clothing in Minnesota outlined in Senate File 9 and Senate File 11. Minnesota businesses, as prominent as the Mall of America and as Main Street is for some clothing and shoes, have built business models predicated on Minnesota's clothing tax exemption. As an association representing clothing retailers, we have heard the concerns of business owners over and over again relating to the threat of a clothing tax. While it is true that a clothing tax would be paid by the consumer and not by businesses, the cost of collecting that tax is the responsibility of the retailer. Retailers tell us that they are concerned about collecting a clothing tax as an added business expense. Today's job growth depends on retailers being able to invest in additional employees Any increased cost, including sales tax collection and remittance costs, work against jobs growth. Even more prominent is the concerns of Minnesota retailers is the potential impact on business. As I mentioned before, retailers have built business models based on current tax policy. There is a real and legitimate concern that a tax on clothing will drive away business as retailers see this competitive advantage go away. In addition, retailers worry that in today's turbulent economy, extending Minnesota's sales tax to clothes takes disposable income out of the hands of consumers and reduces their ability to spend. Any reduction in consumer spending today is felt directly by business. For many businesses, especially Main Street clothing retailers, there is no cushion. With 1 in 4 Minnesota jobs directly depending on retail, now is not the time to tax consumers for their clothing purchases. We ask that the legislature give serious consideration to the covenant made by the state of Minnesota when sales taxes were initiated. Considering any type of change to the clothing tax here in Minnesota, especially without knowing it in the context of comprehensive tax reform, understandably worries Minnesota retailers. I'll stand for any questions the committee may have.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Westland. And I think we'll take the other testimony and take questions, if that's okay. Ms. Bush, welcome to the committee. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Maureen Bausch, and I'm Executive Vice President of Mall of America. My area that I concentrate most on at Mall of America is business development. I thank you and appreciate the fact that you're listening to our case here. And that you'll understand the impact that this new tax would add, how it would affect tourism and our retail industries. As a person who've marketed Mall of America for almost 24 years, I've been on the front lines of driving people to Minnesota, drawing people to Minnesota, and I really do understand what attracts people to this state. When people are deciding to come to Minnesota, the fact that we don't have sales tax on apparel is one of the top three decisions, top three factors in making their decision. And these tourists that come from outside Minnesota to shop in Minnesota are a huge impact on our state. Our tourism industry is a $12 billion industry in this state. It has that much economic impact on the state. 240,000 jobs are associated with tourism. And if we add this tax on apparel, it will absolutely affect our tourism trade. We have firsthand knowledge of that. Mall of America is the number one tourism attraction in the state. The number two is Cabela's, believe it or not. They also sell apparel. Approximately 50% of our sales are from tourists. That's $500 million a year, $500 million. Or because of tourists. 20 years ago, who would have thought people would have come to Minnesota to shop for clothes? I certainly didn't, and I had to sell it. I'm pretty sure no one in this room did either. Woods, water, theater, arts, fishing, hunting, yes. Fashion, no. But today they do come. 1 million people a year come from Chicago to shop in Minnesota. Because they have a tax, a 10% tax in downtown Chicago. 700,000 people plus come from Great Britain to shop here. 400,000 from California. And they spend, again, they spend $500 million just on our property. But they spend all over the state. They go to the Brainerd Lakes region. They go to Green Lake and Diamond Lake. They go all over. They hunt, they fish, they do other things when they're here. They come because of shopping. And 40% of the people we asked said they wouldn't come to Minnesota to shop if we had a sales tax on clothing. This will have a major effect on our tourism industry. The ability to market Minnesota's lack of sales tax is absolutely our clear competitive edge. And the word no is so important. Once we have to add a percent, whether it's 1, 5, 10, it doesn't matter. Once we can't use the word no sales tax on clothes, we lose that competitive edge. And believe me, we're in a different country almost every week, either Mall of America directly or our partners. And we have huge competitors out there. We have Chicago, New York, San Francisco, L.A., a lot easier to get to, because the other two factors that people consider when they're making their decision is ease of access, and quite frankly, it was easier to get to Minnesota 20 years ago than it is today from some of these international markets, selection of retail, and no sales tax on apparel. Our tourism team and our partners right now have 80 travel packages to Minnesota from 32 different countries. These are shopping packages. That's why they're coming. But they're spending money on so many other things: gas, cars, restaurants, theater, ball games, you name it. They don't just come, just shop once they get here. Losing our tourists because of the expansion of sales tax would be a double loss for Minnesota, because these tourists buy so many other things, and they pay taxes in so many other areas, and they support so many other local businesses. And, of course, most importantly, these jobs, these 240,000 jobs that are here because we have tourists. We support the online tax completely, but we hope that you'll find other ways to make up the deficit other than an apparel tax on retailers. You know, our bricks and mortar establishment.
Keep in mind that this is a revenue neutral proposal, Mr. Chairman. It is not proposed here at all to deal with the deficit. Just a okay. Slight correction.
I'm sorry. Our retailers right now, as the Minnesota Retailers Association mentioned, pay a lot in property taxes already. At Mall of America, we pay $24.90 per square foot in real estate taxes. Now, customers, regardless of who they are, will only pay so much for a shirt, a jacket, a coat. There's a ceiling to what they pay. And out of that price, retailers have to pay their employees, who, again, they're paying taxes on those salaries. They have to pay their income or their property tax. They have to pay for their cost of goods. They have to pay for their heat, electricity, rent, and so on. And quite honestly, if they don't make a profit, they're not going to stay in business. And if we lose our tourists, they're not going to have the sales to stay in business. So I appreciate you listening. We are doing more studies all the time, and we'd be happy to share any further studies we have with you as they come available.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Balsh or Ms. Westland. I've never been a big fan of the sales tax on clothing, but if you have some survey data that can document what you say about the impact on the customer, I would appreciate it. And the reason I ask the question is because I look at what's happening on the North Dakota border with Minnesota. North Dakota taxes clothing, and Minnesota doesn't. But the customers all drive through Moorhead to shop in Fargo at the mall. And if sales tax was an impact on clothing purchases, why don't they stop at the mall in Moorhead? And the same thing happens in Grand Forks and East Grand Forks. The shopping is all done on the North Dakota side, even though they have a sales tax on clothing. And it doesn't appear to me that the customers are impacted by that as I look at that. So if you've got some good, solid, hard data that documents the impact on the customer, I'd appreciate it as we go down this road and have this discussion, because it would be helpful to you know, really have some hard numbers on that.
We do. We have a study from McMillan Doolittle that was done specifically for Minnesota, and I'd be happy to share that. We're at the present time. We're also we commissioned Ogilvy, of course, a very well-known advertising marketing agency, to do another study, and I'll have those results in 30 days.
And, Mr. Chair, if you can share that with the committee,
absolutely,
it would be helpful.
Absolutely.
Senator Reyes.
Mr. Chairman, and I would also like some information on the gross sales that are done at the Mall of America that are currently subject to the sales tax that, under my bill, would get some relief. Would go from 6.5% to 6% on those items that are currently taxed, and we know that there's more than just clothing at the Mall of America, a variety of goods and services. And I don't know that that's if that's proprietary or not, but it would really be helpful to know what the gross sales are currently of clothing as opposed to everything else mall.
I actually can tell you that 50% of our sales are in clothing, of the $1 billion in sales we do. I can tell you that the vast majority of sales from tourists are in apparel. They have they might showroom shop for computers.
Mr. Chairman,
and
I don't mean to interrupt you, but if we could get that in writing from your studies, that would really be helpful to our discussion, Mr. Chairman.
No problem.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ardman.
Thank you, Ms. Bausch. Thank you for coming today. I love the Mall of America. I'd hoped we'd have been able to pass the expansion last year, and I hope that we will move forward with that as soon as possible. I think it's great that we're bringing so many people to Minnesota for transactions here in the Minnesota that are taxable and bringing in revenue. I'm not sure why we would want to jeopardize that at all. And so I agree with your position completely. I want to know, can you say again how many tourists from out of Minnesota visit the Mall of America every year?
17 million.
17 million. Thank you. Oh, one other thing, if I could, Mr. Chair. Is there any other business or industry that brings that much tourism to Minnesota?
No. The next largest tourism destination, believe it or not, is another retailer, Cabela's in Medford.
Thank you very much.
Okay, anything further from members? Senator Est?
Mr. Chairman, you may. I think there's no further business before the committee. You may adjourn.
Okay.
Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, if the committee could adopt Senate File 11 as amended, and then we can lay that over.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, that's my motion.
Okay, the motion is to adopt Senate File 11 as amended. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails.
And then lay it over.
And the bill will be, 10 File 11 will be laid over.
Thank you.
And before we adjourn, if you have anything you want saved, remember to put it in the save file in your folder, and we meet tomorrow at 9 in this room. Okay, meeting adjourned.
It's John. Thank you.